condition, my condition was in.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
Found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in. I found my
mind. Well, folks, Jackson Jacks. I'm Tom Howley, Mr. Matt Weber, and Mr. Jack Silverman on the board. S&P futures up 975. We're trying to make it a few days in a row in this rally. Pretty solid rally. All kind of leading up to whatever he thinks is a Fed rate cut. Seems to me we've gone well past the point of a quarter point rate cut. Plus, we've got gold running up, which inflation sort of thing. We've got a lot of stuff happening. Dow up 88, NASDAQ futures up 34. But our president says if the Fed hadn't screwed up by raising rates, the Dow would be 10,000 higher. Well, there's a number. IBM, however, is laying off 1,000 people. So that's where you are. And a lot of news, a lot of momentum now to the upside. You know, and we'll see the you know, whether we continue this type of move or not. You know, this is we were way down a couple weeks before, and now we're turning around, and I honestly believe that under nothing I've ever read, seen, or whatever would leave anybody to think that a rate cut from 275 to 225 is going to save anything that might be wrong. But that, you know, that's what we're, that's the group we're into now, is that as long as the Fed's pouring money and everything's okay. Because on a nominal basis, it sort of is. But if all you do is pump up asset prices, I guess if you own assets, it's a good thing. Which, by the way, it's been a terrific week for me. I'm not so sure I trust it. But, all you do is just keep rolling the puts up and lock in what you can, and, then if and when it turns, you're okay. So it's not like it's, you know, it's a tough, you know, sort of recipe. I mean, you just have to be diligent at it, and individual parts of the market are continuing to move up, and some areas are not. The most interesting 2 days this week were the day that the NASDAQ was down something about 160 points after being down over 200 a couple times during the day. And the next day we bounced back almost the exact same number, except it was completely different stocks. The first day, it was almost all the FANGs. It was Amazon and those things were down 65, 80 bucks. And the next day, they came back maybe a third, and yet all the rest of the NASDAQ stocks sort of made up for them, which is very, very interesting if you looked at the internals, because we've been talking on the show, and a lot of other people have been talking in different financial things. It's been lately, you see an awful lot of individual, I mean, the trading is all, you come in and the S&Ps are down 30 or they're up 30 and all them. Every stock goes flying down, every stock goes flying up. But I don't think I've seen in my career as many times where every stock in the transportation is up, the next day every stock in transportation is down. Same thing in the Dow where you've had this, I'd say 10 or 15, 20, 30 point move in the S&P on the opening, and just every stock gets either taken out or bought up as people do the ARB, the arbitrage. And Lou, how are you, buddy?
Good morning, sir. I'm jet lagged and a little out of sorts, but let me put it this way: I'm wide awake right now. It's it's early afternoon or late afternoon by my body clock.
How is it that a guy who's a JAG officer, pilot, hung around with Catherine Bell, and did that all for his entire life? How could a guy like you get jet lagged?
Well, you know, you get past a certain age and you you spend enough time in the other time zone, and it takes you a little while to adjust. What I need is better drugs, I think.
Which leads me to the follow-up question. When you were 25 and flying around in planes and people were sending you all over the world for different stuff, do those guys get jet lag, or are they somewhat immune to it?
No, your circadian rhythms were always a problem, and it wasn't as noticeable because I was younger, but you know, every 3 weeks, roughly, I would be changing time zones by more than 8 hours, so you don't really adjust to that. You're just sort of continually fatigued, and you have to factor that in. I mean, that was a big issue on our crew briefings and safety briefings, and the general rule was to try to sleep whenever you could, just to get into a pattern of, you know, short 1 to 2 hour naps that would help refresh you a little bit.
I've read that if you go like to Europe for business for 2, 3, 4 days, one of the possible solutions, and everybody's got there's a million of them out there, is that you never actually embrace the new time zone. You stay in your old as best you can.
I think I've heard of that, and I think actually that's, if you've got a schedule that allows you to do that, that's great. The problem I had was good old Chicago. I took off last week headed for Ireland, and the flight, I was supposed to, you know, jump from Denver to Chicago, Chicago to Dublin, and of course your weather sucks.
Yeah.
And it shut down, that front shut down the airport, so that even though I had a three hour lag time in O'Hare, I missed it. But we were 4 hours late getting in, so I missed that flight, and you know, got in around midnight, and then got up midday to Newark, flew to Newark, and then Newark to Dublin, got in at Dublin at 7:05, you know, basically 18 hours after I was supposed to get in there, and went straight into work, you know, went straight to meetings, and it was impossible for me to do what you've got. If you're in a situation where you've got maybe one or two meetings a day, and you can stay synced in, especially if you're working, you know, with your business back in the States, that makes sense. That wasn't an option for me from the get-go, unfortunately.
What, did you at least get, like, the cot? When Kevin had to spend the night in Grand Rapids, there weren't even any cots.
What I did, you know, again, this is the function of being in a large metropolitan area. The O'Hara was jammed, and so I didn't even bother to try to sleep in a cot. I went to the embassy suites out there, and you know, got up, got a good breakfast, and then wandered over to the airport and spent a couple hours at O'Hare waiting on the flight to Newark, and then bounced from Newark. So the irony, of course, is that by the time I got to Newark, the storm that had hit Chicago
was now in Newark,
and we literally sat on the runway. I didn't think they did this anymore, but we taxied out and sat on the runway for about an hour and a half while the plane was just buffeted by the storm, and then I got out. So it was an awful start to the trip. Fortunately, things cleaned up once I got over there.
Well, that's cool. The what do you make of we did a. I missed you yesterday on your usual Thursday day because I was talking a little bit about D-Day and the practice landing of the few months before that was a huge disaster. And
where the Germans caught them?
And, well, they first was friendly fire. The one group was late, so when Ike insisted they have live fire to get people used to it, some of the live fire landed on our guys because they were late getting there or something. Anyway, they lost 739 people. Evidently, there were 10 lieutenants or higher that were lost. They didn't know whether they were killed or captured, and those guys knew all the scoop on D-Day because they were double secret, who the hell knows, but they never really knew if those guys were caught or dead. And it was a worry all the way to D-Day, evidently.
I was in Germany for D-Day, and it was pretty interesting being in public places with the TVs, talking about the president and the Brits and, celebrating all this stuff. And interestingly enough, I was meeting with some folks who had immigrated from the former Soviet Union. And of course, the Russians have a completely different picture of D-Day. D-Day for them is very much a, well, hey, what kept you kind of thing.
Oh, God, yeah. They were after us for like a year and a half, weren't they?
Yeah, well, the second front was opened already. It was in North Africa and then in Italy. So we tied up a number of German divisions there and some pretty good troops. The preparation for D-Day and the assurance that it was coming locked down German divisions there that weren't fighting in the Far East. But for the Russians, World War II is their war. They won the fight against Germany and that's all there is to it. They tore the guts out of it. I mean, even Churchill says that. So it was a very interesting thing being, very close to the scene of the action with one of the major participants and just sort of looking at the reaction of the German people. I think for the Germans, at least the ones that I interacted with, it was okay. We get why you're celebrating this, and yeah, it was a horrible period, and we lost, and we understand how that works. I tried to engage a couple of the folks I was meeting with on, what do you think about NATO, and what do you think about maintaining a defense status. In light of recent developments, and the younger guys were, we're not really sure we need to do that. That's a very expensive thing. And the older guys, when I say older, I mean people about my age, maybe a little bit older, the guys who had a very clear memory of the Cold War. They were a little more direct in terms of, if we don't have NATO, we'd better be spending a lot on our defense because things are getting dangerous to our east.
Yeah, I would say they are too. It's bizarre. Having never been in it, thank God. But when you look at some of these, I'll use the term bleep ups that people made, it is kind of stunning that nobody ever lost their job over something. If you have a live fire exercise that is so messed up that you lose 740 people or 739, you would think somebody's head would roll, and yet it didn't. And they trained for months and months when Trump was talking about the cliffs that these guys scaled and how long they trained for that. Nobody ever mentions the fact that when they got to the top, the Germans had moved the guns like months before. I mean, Ike went on to be president and everything, but Ike had some major bleep-ups in his career and seemingly never affected him. I mean,
the ultimate result is what people were looking at. D-Day was a masterpiece compared to North Africa. If I would encourage the readers to pick up, I mean, if you're interested in World War II, pick up Rick Atkinson's trilogy, Army at Dawn, which starts with the book Army at Dawn, which talks about the North Africa invasion. And I mean, you read that, and it's hard to imagine that we were able to defeat Germany after you read what happened there. Or read the Soviet response to the initial German invasion. There was no shortage of foolishness. I know that some generals were cashiered. There were generals cashiered in North Africa because of screw ups. Of course, the guys responsible for home defense in Hawaii were cashiered after Pearl Harbor. and I know that Eisenhower relieved generals during during the war. So I know there were punishments for some screw ups. I don't know whether these guys were disciplined as a result of what happened off the English coast, but you know, the bottom line is that at the time, they may have just said, you know, we got bigger things to worry about, and we can't effectively replace these people and still continue with the invasion. Somebody
somewhere, Lou, in some meeting had to say, the guy just lost 739 people in a practice run. Are we sure we got the right guy?
Somebody probably did say that. And then somebody else said, well, okay. And that was the result of, you know, X, he didn't order that screw up. It happened under his control, or under his area of responsibility, but not under his control. And who's our alternative if we replace him? And everybody looks around the room and goes, well, we don't have anybody that's trained up to this level or whatever, and so we'll keep him on. Those decisions get made all the time. You know, what's my alternative? I got a major invasion coming. I got to, you know, you want to remove this guy. Who's the alternative?
Well, you know, what's interesting is one of the guys who was 90-some years old yesterday was talking about how, you know, the landing craft, you see him in the movies like The Longest Day. The guy who drives the landing craft is Mr. Stoutheart, drives right to the beach, lets these guys off. They walk out into the sand. And this guy was saying that, you know, the thing was getting shelled. So they ended up essentially swimming in, and Audrey's dad, who was in a landing craft deal at the Aleutian Islands, because we had, an airstrip up there, and he was an airstrip repair guy, if we're going to call that. So they land him, and what he was telling me, they're supposed to land you in, you know, 4 feet of water, and these guys got cold feet. There might be a rock up there, so they dump them in 50 feet. They had to swim. Was that like the normal thing for the landing craft driver to say, I'm close enough and get the hell out of there?
I don't know what the policies were, but there are a number of accounts of the landing craft missing the beaches.
Yeah.
And dumping their guys early because they couldn't get in, or they thought they couldn't get in. You know, and their job is, look, I gotta get people out. You know, I gotta get people out of here and go back and get more and bring them in. Otherwise this whole thing falls apart. So there were a number of guys who were dumped into, you know, 10 feet of water.
Yeah, well, that's
with
what
all that gear on, and they drowned.
Yeah, that's what happened. That's what the guy said yesterday. He said he was a good swimmer and he managed to make it in, basically.
But interestingly enough, in 1973, when I went through sort of the basic water survival training for just basic survival swimming at the Air Force Academy. One of the things they had us do was put on a weight belt with about 30 pounds of weight, and then they dumped us into the diving pool or diving well was 15 feet or 18 feet deep. And so they dropped you in there, and they said, all right, you're going to practice jumping to the surface, getting a breath, sinking back down to the bottom, till you hit the bottom, and then jumping again and pulling yourself. You know, you get one arm pull or two arm pulls to get to the surface. Get a breath and move yourself forward up the slope of the pool bottom until you can recover and get out of the water. And we're all going, where was this a problem? And the answer was, this was a problem in amphibious operations. And of course, you know, we all said that's why we joined the Air Force Academy. You know,
yeah.
we didn't really plan to take part in this stuff. And
well, it looked like a Marine.
Said, yeah, but this is a skill set that is carried over from those. You know, from those episodes.
Do I look like Semper Fi? I'm supposed to be a pilot.
Well, I just, you know, we all kind of looked at each other, but, you know, listen.
Hold that thought. We got to go to break. SP Futures up 10. Dow Futures up 87. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTIsecurities.com. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now.
Well, welcome back. Starts and Jacks. I'm Tom Al. It's Matt Weber on the board. Mr. Jack Silverman helping him out. We also have Mr. Lou Michaels on a Friday spot. I feel like it's Thursday now, but it's Friday. SP futures up 875. Now Dow futures up about 80, and Nasdaq futures up 29.25. No huge stocks in the Dow moving anywhere today, except we got Apple up 70 cents. Apple's made a pretty big comeback. It was
down in the low 170s, back up to 185. Around the rest of the world, we have Europe is up 96 points. DAX, that's not Europe. DAX up 96. It's 0.8%. We got FTSE up 64.8%. CAC around up 81.5%. Been a little catch up with us yesterday. Nikkei up 110, 20,884. It's up 0.5%. I think the Chinese markets are close, so we won't give those numbers. Those were yesterday's numbers. They're all up 85 cents, but 53.44, bouncing back from almost down to 50. So those are, Saudi Arabia's talking about OPEC, and you know what? This OPEC, they're useless, but people still pay attention to them. Run up 104, so that spread is now $9, up to $9.40, so it's moved from 7.50. Natural gas 2.34, RBOB 1.72. Gold a little bit of a pause today, down 3.50. Silver unchanged, but they've been up all week. Best week since March of 2018, so we'll see if that keeps going. I'm going to lock in some of my profits in there today. I don't know if that's the right thing to do, but I'm going to do it anyway. What do you have for us, Traffic Brothers Sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a great start on a Friday morning here this morning, as it usually is. Slow traffic on Friday mornings. No issues coming in on the Edens or Kennedy. Traffic starting to build on the Eisenhower and Stevenson, but no accidents or issues to report. Same for the Southside Expressways, Dan Ryan, I-57 and the Bishop Ford. We do have an issue downtown. It looks like there was a rollover crash, Chief, on Franklin between Washington and Randolph. That happened earlier this morning.
I'm saying they were going less than 30. That's the limit.
Yes. Yeah. It still puzzles me how you could have a rollover crash on a downtown street where this.
Maybe the guy got too close to the guy playing the stereo, and the stereo blew him over.
But that has Franklin closed right now as crews work on that situation. But everything else is looking good out there. Weather today, lots of sunshine today. We'll be in the mid-70s out in the suburbs. In the city, upper 60s, low 70s. We're showing a high of 71 with lots of sunshine. So a beautiful day for the first week of June. Right now it is mostly clear and 57 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, a hot one down in Phoenix, a high of 102 today with lots of sun. Right now it's 79 and clear. In sports, Cubs took 2 of 3 from the Rockies, but fell in the series finale yesterday afternoon. 3-1 was the final in that one. The Cardinals come to town this weekend. Cubs swept them 2 weeks ago, then they returned the favor, sweeping the Cubs last week, and now we'll see what happens here at the third Cubs-Cardinals series of the year. White Sox were off yesterday. They'll look to snap their 2-game skid at Kansas City. That's a 7:15 Chicago time first pitch tonight. Diamondbacks were off as well. They're in Toronto tonight, interleague action north of the border. That'll be a 4:07 Arizona time first pitch tonight, Diamondbacks at the Blue Jays. In hockey, the St. Louis Blues are 1 game away from winning their first Stanley Cup. They won in Boston last night. 2-1 was the final over the Bruins. So the Blues lead 3-2. They'll head back to St. Louis for Game 6 on Sunday. NBA Finals are back tonight. Game 4, Golden State versus Toronto. This game will be in the Bay Area, an 8 p.m. Chicago time tip-off. Toronto leads that series 2-1. Golden State is expecting Klay Thompson back, but not Kevin Durant. Chief.
I'm going to go play that video of the guy shoving the guy about another 400 times today so I can really get a look at it. Hey, back by popular demand for the Triple Crown, Mr. Joel Unkonen. Joel, is your guy going to win again?
Who are you referring to? Are you referring
the guy that got interfered?
The horse that won the Preakness?
Yes,
or are you referring
yes.
to the jockey who rode Maximum Security?
I'm talking about the guy, the horse that got interfered with, and then but then came back and won the Preakness.
Yeah, there you go, Chief. Well, let me break down the race for you just real quickly. A lot of the Belmont is about, you know, breeding and pedigree. And there's a sire. His name is Tappet. And he has sired 3 of the last 5 winners of the Preakness. And he has 3 horses in the race. One's going to be the favorite, Taxidus, Intrepid Heart, and Bourbon War. I'm going to stay off that. I'm going to stay off Taxidus because he's a favorite. Intrepid Heart, kind of lightly raced, Bourbon War, 8th in the Preakness. The horse War Will, now this is, I'm calling this the What If Belmont, because what if that horse wouldn't have been interfered with in the Kentucky Derby? We could be looking at a Triple Crown. And what if they didn't pull down Maximum Security? He could be going for a Triple Crown. So, this is disappointing. It's disappointing that there's not a story behind this race, but he had a good race in the Preakness. He's going to be your second favorite, like 2-3-1. So you know, attractive, but not real attractive. But based on past performance, he won the Preakness, good race in the Derby until he got interfered. The only question I have on him is he raced in both the Derby and the Preakness, so he might be a little bit tired. That's my theory on him. And I'm gonna go with a horse called Everfast, and he's gonna go off at probably 12-13 to 1, and I like him for two reasons: kind of sentimental and also tactical. The tactical was he was second in the Preakness, and he was closing strong. So you got to figure, you know, the mile and a half Belmont, the longest of the races, as opposed to mile and 3/16 of the Preakness. He might have a little bit more room to run down the horses in the stretch. Also, he could be 12-13 to 1. The sentimental reason is, you know, Louis Saez, he was the jockey of Maximum Security. He's getting the mount. Joel Rosario he was on Everfast. He switched to another horse, Sir Winston. Louis gets the mount. I think the guy is a hell of a driver. I think he had no way of controlling that horse around the turn on that sloppy track going 40 miles an hour. And I think he's out for revenge. So second in the Preakness, I like the jockey. I'm going with Everfast. And I'll throw him in some perfectas with, you know, War of Will and maybe some of these Tappet-sired horses. But that's my pick for you, Chief.
Don't you guys have a summit coming up?
We do. Thanks for mentioning it. It is going to be June 20th in New York City at the Sheraton Plaza Hotel. You can go to bzprofit.com, and you can use the code PMP50. We're gonna have a live trading floor there, Chief. We're gonna have several active traders showing their screens, talking about their strategies, trading off the open. And I'm really looking forward to it. I miss the days of the trading floor, and we're going to replicate that in New York City.
Are you going to have a guy sitting off to the side in, like, a fake White House intercepting tweets and trading?
Those are the days. I thought you were going to ask me if, remember they used to have the guys that were in charge of calling out the prices? Remember
the power
used to go over the pit?
Yep.
Can you imagine that, calling out the trades? No quarter trade, 20 offer. Get a big axe on the board, Chief, but only you and I remember those days.
Oh, you're not kidding. Take care, buddy.
Go Blue.
So, hey, Lou, you with us, I hope?
I am still here.
Two areas, since you've been, you are our foreign correspondent. What is the Germans, are they as hung up on Brexit as the people from Belgium seem to be? And secondly, what is the view on tariffs? I mean, it has to have come up somewhere.
The discussion on Brexit is, again, with the people I was meeting with, was pretty straightforward. They said, how do you get to be the leader of a major European power, one of the key financial players in Europe, and you cannot get this thing done? It really, they were fascinated by the fact that this was just some kind of what a mess this was for the British conservatives and how they just simply stalled, and it all kind of fell apart for them. That was their number one issue. The Germans, I think, are pretty comfortable with the Brits either going. I mean, they see if the Brits leave, it's an opportunity for Frankfurt and Berlin to move into the financial. The financial role that London has now. On the other hand, I don't think they see it as that much of a risk or a risk if Britain, you know, Britain blows up or Britain, you know, kind of continues to struggle on here. They've got the issues in Germany are pretty straightforward. It's you know, Merkel and how this illegal or how this immigration thing is playing out. It's preservation of German culture. It's the issues with significant numbers of people coming into your country, you know, especially in relation to the percentage, who are not assimilating and don't share your values. And what do you do there? Those are the things that I saw that were of concern to the guys I was dealing with. with respect to tariffs, they just said, well, this will be an interesting exercise in democratic power. Does your president have the, and does your voting block, your voters have the stomach to take some short-term hits over potential long-term gains? And, the one of the guys said, well, given that the attention span of the American people seems to be about 5 seconds, my bet is probably no, especially with the alignment of the mainstream press against the president on this, as well as people in his own party with respect to Mexico. They obviously look at tariffs. The guys I was dealing with looked at tariffs as just a fairly straightforward tool of statecraft, but they were sort of marveling at, is the United States going to basically just try to shut out foreign products consistently like this? They weren't sure whether we could sustain against China. They were pretty sure we could make some impact with Mexico.
Well, I mean, I think what's happening is that it's not the mainstream press, Lou. It's every economist I've ever read since the day I started reading this stuff 50-some years ago. Everybody is convinced that there's going to be some protection someplace because, some people like to keep their farmers in business and things like that. That by and large, the freer the trade is, the better it is for most people.
I agree. I'm not a fan of tariffs. I don't think the president is ignorant of that fact either, notwithstanding what he says. These are being used as a political weapon. I mean, we're at a point where we think that the politics of immigration and the politics of dealing with China in terms of its trade practices are sufficient that it's worth damaging our economy in the hope that we will damage their economies more.
The part I don't quite get on this whole mess, two things, Lou. And since after last weekend in Illinois, I refused to vote again for another Democrat if I could possibly do it.
Isn't that unbelievable?
And since I can't really vote for any of the current Republicans, I don't know where that leaves me. Is the guy from Starbucks still running? I don't know. I haven't heard from him in a while. I guess I could vote for him. But anyway, the it seems to me that when I hear the person talk, now whether or not he or tweet or whatever utterage he comes up with, you hope, but I seriously doubt whether Trump has any friggin' clue what this stuff all means. I mean, everything, no matter what he says, it's always this two-stage transaction. If I have a trade deficit with your country, even though I might have a current account, even or surplus, because my people own people in your place, which he doesn't seem to go to, if I have a trade deficit, somehow you're screwing me. Even though there could be a third country that those guys have a deficit with, that we have a surplus with, and all three of us are all even. He does not seem to be mentally capable of picking up that this is a 30-step transaction, not two.
I think you're probably right that the president does not look at these things in a overly complicated or complex way. I suspect what he does is he says, all right, what's the problem? The problem is X. Okay. If the problem is X, then what do we have in our possession that can make the other guy deal with X? And, I'm going to look for places where I can hurt you.
Well,
I can hurt you here, that's what I'm going to do.
But you can't, and we've gone so far here. I've talked, well, you've been off a couple of weeks, but my theme has been all along. I, for one, for anybody who's listened to the show for as long as we've been on, I don't really like any of the practices that China does because one of my family members is one of the first people over there after Kissinger, and they tried to rip off all their mining equipment stuff. You're not going to get me. But my point is, what we're trying to accomplish, we don't seem to be. We're not going to. Let me put it this way: we know the World War II reference in 1938. If we didn't want Hitler to get the plans of the P-51 Mustang, We had to make sure the people here didn't give it to them. You're not going to cut that deal with Hitler. I'm not comparing China to Hitler, but my point is if we don't want Chinese money over here, then Trump has to tell his Republican buddies, no, you can't sell your golf course to the Chinese for $30 million instead of the $20 million somebody bids here, and then figure out a way where there's a law where they can't see what kind of grass you're using. Because they just bought the place. I mean, if we don't want them here, we don't want them here. You can't have it both ways. If you don't want Boeing to give the plans of the 737 to the Chinese, tell Boeing not to do it. I don't see how you negotiate this with the other side. That's been my mystery to this whole mess. How is this a Chinese problem? This is a U.S. problem.
In some respects it is. I mean, what I think as I understand our objectives there, what he's trying to do is get the Chinese to basically police their problems that our people have willingly embraced.
Right. I think it's a zero sum game. I don't think you get anywhere with that.
No. It's something we've demanded of other trade partners to maintain fair trade, and I think that's why it's being demanded here.
But I've even heard some people. I wish I could remember all these names. Say that when the Chinese buy a company here, they shouldn't be able to use the technology. Wait a minute. They just bought the place. Tell them they can't buy it. I mean, that's insane, Lou. I get to buy your car for 20% more than anybody else will pay for it, and I can't take it apart to see what holds a seat together. It's my car.
Yeah. No, I know. But the issues with intellectual property protection have long been a problem there.
Yeah.
And you know, we have evidence that sits out there that they've been planting, you know, they've been planting Trojan horses in our hardware, in the hardware they've been sending out. That's why Huawei is being effectively banned from our 5G network, and we're demanding that our allies do the same. I mean, I don't like tariffs, but I want to give the president some credit for confronting an issue that has been a big one. And it's China. And it's China's long-term strategy. And it's facing, it's a representative democracy facing, a dictatorship that is engaged in a long-term military, economic, social, and cultural kind of appropriation of the world marketplace.
I don't disagree.
He's trying to address that.
Well, but in some way, Lou. But my concern with the man is, it's one. By the way, I applaud the fact that he's not afraid to stir the pot. Okay, but when you stir the pot, you need to have a solution. I don't see one. I mean, I honestly don't. I mean, the Chinese. We all know they have their actually a lot of what their attitudes are towards things are the same as ours. They essentially want world cultural domination, right? It's okay if we want it because we're righteous, but it's not okay when they want it because they're not so righteous. By the way, I happen to agree with that. They're not so righteous, and we, I think, pretty much are. That's not the point. But the point is, Microsoft, if you tell me the biggest example of this, I'm going to say, I'll exaggerate the hell out of it, that the Chinese have 90 bazillion computers, and they bought, you know, 20 sets of Windows. And somehow or another, everybody in China's got Windows. Yet somehow or another, Microsoft, by withholding the updates or making people pay for Office or something, they've made this somehow worthwhile to them. Now, whether they should have been able to or not, to give those guys that kind of computer party, that, you know, I don't know enough about it, but maybe that should be on the list of the 100 things they can't have. But what I'm saying is somehow or another, the people that have made these deals one way or the other, they're not squealing. It must have been worth it to Microsoft to have China as a client. They must have got the money back some other way, because you don't see Bill Gates stomping up and down the Oval Office do something to these guys. Boeing's not complaining because they're half the airplane market now, or will be in 10 years. I mean, it's really hard to fight this battle when the people that are your soldiers aren't complaining. I mean,
I understand. We have not mobilized our economic I'm not sure we could legally, but we have not effectively mobilized, you know, the economic muscle of our private markets,
right,
and our private dealers to attack this issue. I mean, there's a way to do it. But it goes back to more state control, and I'm not sure that the president is in a position to be able to swing that big a baseball bat.
We toss these words around since 9/11, which is, you know, it's pushing like a long time. We've been, quote, at war. All right, and you and I earlier in the show and yesterday, I tried my best without you to talk about, I'm going to say, a real war, because all this stuff's a real war if you're the one getting shot or blown up. But in 3.5 years, we mobilized and we did an awful lot of stuff. And when you look at people building a bridge here, for God's sake, or a subway, it takes a decade. And you look at what we managed to do in 3.5 years when we collectively put our minds to it. I mean, if we're quote, at war with 48 people, different countries, you don't get to steal money from the government as a national sport. You don't get to sell stuff to people. I mean, we don't even know where we're at here. That's my problem. I mean, if I don't want those guys to have a bunch of stuff, I'm going to say you're not giving it to them or it's treason. I mean, it's not, well, if they buy it from you, if they pay enough, you can come in here and get a dispensation, or that's a Catholic word, but whatever, what do they call it, when you get a waiver or something like
that? Yeah.
I mean, how many guys, last time when we weren't...
An offset, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the Iranian, Trump bleats like a goose about how we're gonna do this to Iran. Lou, there were 12 countries that had waivers. Everybody they shipped oil to had a waiver. What the hell kind of boycott is that?
Well, I mean, agreed. I mean, are we prepared? The question is, are you serious, or is this just political grandstanding? I've often wondered, and we've talked a little bit in past episodes, but I've often wondered about what a true national effort here, a true, like, peer-to-peer combat or a war effort would look like here, in terms of our basically saying, okay, we're now diverting 30% of the gross domestic product into arms, and we're swinging the biggest economic club we can. We're shutting down the banking system. We're making it impossible for people to do business, because this is war, it's a national or an existential war for us, and we're going to take the following steps to protect our interests. I don't know what that would look like.
I don't either.
There are some interesting, some interesting questions about whether we could muster the political will to do it. But one of the projections on a peer-to-peer conflict, let's say in Eastern Europe, if the Russians decide that they're going to go, and we decide we're coming in with NATO, I mean, you're talking about monstrous losses in people and equipment within the first couple of weeks. And that would require us to do the kinds of things you're talking about, and I don't know what it would look like. My guess is that you would see, unrestricted economic warfare basically looks like we're gonna prevent your ships from carrying your freight. We're gonna stop your airplanes from flying. We're gonna shut down your ability to buy anything. We're gonna effectively prevent you from being able to harvest your crops. That's what unrestricted economic warfare looks like, and I don't know whether we would be prepared to undertake something like that.
Lou, I honestly think right now that, unfortunately, and it's one of my biggest criticisms of the current administration, is if we're going to do something like that, we are not big enough to do it alone, and pissing off our allies on a daily basis doesn't get you there.
Yeah, and I think the president's calculation is, if you don't have to like us, but you will realize that we're your only alternative in a situation like that. I mean that seems to be the thought.
Luke, can we get you to hang around a little bit, You got to go, or can you hang around a little bit?
I can hang around for a few minutes.
All right. Luckback Magazine, the guide to money and probability, is available on newsstands for $7.99 an issue. By the way, Lou, you got to get one of these magazines and put it on your little coffee table, because you'll seem like a big shot. Stocks and Jocks listeners receive a free digital subscription at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Just go there and get it. I encourage you. I'm bringing a couple copies that Jeff gave me. I'm going to distribute them around my house so people think I'm 25 years old and not older. So there. SP Futures up 8.25. NASDAQ Futures up 26.75. Be right back. Stocks and Jocks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's JOHN@PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening.
Hello, Homer Broadcasting Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. He's Mr. Weber on the board with his assistant, Mr. Silverman, and we also have Mr. Lou Michaels. I'm sitting here reading two articles here, so my brain is foggy. Two articles and talking at the same time. Lou, how's that? Is that multitasking? What is that? I'm not sure what that is. Foolishness or something.
That's turning your brain into oatmeal.
Yes, well.
That's what that is.
Maybe some grits, you know? I'm just going to try some grits. What do you think?
I'm not a big fan of grits, but they're kind of tasteless, but I guess if you dump cheese on them or in hot
sauce,
what
I was thinking. That's what I was thinking. Anyway, Lou, I have, kind of a question. This is a, maybe my genes. I don't know. I don't remember my mom telling me once that when she, first time she watched Gone with the Wind, all she thought about were the parties and the outfits. The second time she saw it, all she thought about were the wounded when she was like 15 years older. And, I don't, it's surprising to me when you mention the immigration shit with the, why don't, and again, I mean, these are big issues and the issue in Mexico is a big issue, but remember watching, there's a, if anybody watches the film on Hoover Dam, on the building of Hoover Dam, there's this, you know, it's black and white, it's, you know, kind of grainy, but basically it's this incredible project where they drill all these holes and they redirect the river through the mountain for 2 years while they build a thing, and it's a fascinating, it's probably one of the single biggest, most incredible construction things man has ever done. I mean, basically. And, so the second time I watched it, Lou, the first 5 minutes, which I totally ignored the first time through, all these people heard there was going to be a dam there and there was going to be work. And they are there in their old, you know, the trucks from like the Grapes of Wrath, that movie, if you ever saw that one, are all parked on the side of the Colorado River with these tents. And they're getting muddy water out of the river, and these cities, women carrying around their babies, and Lou, nothing could be worse than the bottom of the dam in the Colorado River in the summertime. There isn't a blade of grass. I mean, yeah. And if the first thing that comes to your mind is, how, my God, how tough was life wherever these people came from? They're ready to put up with this crap for 3 months in the hopes of getting a job. And when I look at this Central American thing, people walking through Mexico, and we've got a president that has the, in my opinion, has zero, what's the thing where you feel what other people feel?
Empathy.
Yeah, the man has zero empathy for anything, in my mind. I mean, I don't know what the mentality is there, but I think what, we look at this now, if the Fed's gonna do something and the market's up more today, there's an awful lot of people in this country that think their world is okay. But somehow, Lou, whenever people, you know, basically bitch at me at parties and they say, well, it's these refugees, we don't want any of them. I said, do you have any idea that there's like 62 million people in the world that are like moving because where they live is unlivable? Some of it's our fault, some of it's somebody else's fault, some of it's our own fault. I mean, does anybody put two and two together that all this, a lot of this Mideast stuff was us and our allies blowing up essentially a country, which then took the country next to it, without any idea of what we're going to do with it when we got there? And, I mean, these people are, I mean, you know, there's people that live in Gaza. There's people, I'm not taking sides in that. There's people that live in the Baca Valley. There's 2 million refugees in Jordan. There's a zillion people that are males from age 18 to 35 without a job, which is nothing but trouble all the time, and it has been throughout history. Does anybody get how big this problem is? If the economy worldwide had better start growing, or we got problems.
Well, the question is, again, from a public policy perspective, how do you deal with that? If you allow these people unrestricted access,
I'm not saying
they
you should
take
do
you down with them, you know?
I'm not you saying
know,
you should
and,
do
and so and so you end up with a flood of you know, a huge flood of social problems that you are basically taking on because, hey, we're nice guys. So if you're in Sweden and you see your sexual assault numbers go through the roof right after you get this huge influx of young men, you know, over-hormoned young men who start setting up communities in your cities where your law enforcement people can't even go.
I have a question for that. Why?
My point is, yeah, we got to deal with that. But you know, do you deal with it? It can't play. It has to be dealt with at the source rather than at the end of the pipeline.
But here's where I'm kind of getting to. It always takes me forever to get there. Why is it? I'm not saying that we don't. There's a big Arab community out in Orlin where Audrey lives, that whole southwest suburbs area. Lou, I've never seen people adapt and become American faster ever in my lifetime than this group. There's not a problem there. I mean, there might be a few in, you know, some of the schools or something, but why is the? I mean, I'll tell you what. I would find it a couple times I've been to Germany. Talk about a tough crowd to break into. I mean, if you're black or a gypsy or something, you're walking down the street there, you really do look out of place. I mean, we're here. Somebody Arab doesn't look that out of place. I mean, why is it that Europe has this incredible problem with assimilation? We don't seem to. Or what am I missing?
Well, we've got issues with some of it.
Some of it, yeah.
I think historically, well, and let me just say that I think there's something going on now that wasn't going on 30 years ago in terms of, for example, immigration from the Middle East. Canada's having a trouble with assimilation, of all places. Another nation basically built by immigrants. And we are seeing, you know, assimilation failures here. I think there's something going on with the kind of culture that has developed in certain parts of the Middle East that is now migrating to places, you know, Sweden, France, Belgium, Germany, the UK. Somebody's going to have to explain to me. When I was in London last week, talking with a solicitor there, and somebody's going to have to explain to me. We were talking about this, and I said, you have to explain to me how you guys, one of the most democratic, very, you know, democratic countries in Europe, how people growing up here ended up being the biggest supporters of ISIS. More people left England to go fight for ISIS.
Really?
Than any other place in Europe. And I'm going, how do those people get homegrown in a culture like this? And he said, it's because they live in insular places where they don't hear anything else. And they grab on to this idea of, you know, the Islamic, this particular unusual, kind of strange, Islamic sort of side religion that ISIS was promoting. I think that relates to something that is more of a modern, a more current kind of or variation of Islamic culture rather than anything about you know the Arab culture generally. I think there's been a rise recently of a pan-Islamic kind of outlook that just says you've got to protect yourself regardless of where you are, and your goal is to spread, you know, Sharia, spread the culture, rather than assimilate into your
own country. Well, I'll tell you what, Lou, you know way more about this than me, but if I'm not an older white male and I want to assimilate, I'm going to assimilate in Chicago a hell of a lot quicker than I can in Frankfurt.
I would think so, but you know, I don't know. I mean, the Germans have a lot longer history of, you know, cultural homogeneity than we do.
I honestly believe, Lou, I would think
that's true.
On a huge scale, I don't know how you do it, but I know if somebody gave me some shekels, what's that for a Yiddish word? And you gave me 2,500 of these people from Guatemala, I can drop them on Chicago's south side in an area where there's nobody there, Lou. It's empty. I can put them up in the schools for a little while, have those guys start building their own houses. I'll bet in 3 years we have a thriving community. I mean, the fact is, we have room here. And I don't think these are bad people. I mean, I think they're probably, you're going to get a couple of bad apples. We got a few. I'm saying there's a microcosm here and there's a macrocosm, but I think as a macrocosm, most people here have to realize how much trouble the world is in this regard. There's all kinds of people moving from places that people used to be able to live in now can't.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm sort of surprised we haven't seen an influx of Venezuelans. Here.
Why are they going to get here? You can't walk.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, buddy, for hanging.
Talk to you next week.
All right. SP Futures up 775. Mr. Weber, how many times did you watch that video yesterday?
I haven't seen the video.
How could you possibly?
I try to avoid things like that. The national hot take debate shows.
Seven, it had to be six cameras on it.
My guess is were you on the treadmill and that's how you watched that? Because why would you watch that?
It was on. Talk about a great story. I had a adult beverage with my friend Robert from the Fed, who's going to Washington next week and testify somewhere about some of the Fed stuff. Terrific guy. And Stephanie from the show came by.
Okay.
She doesn't travel alone anymore.
She's got the little one.
The little one comes right with the incredible contraption. I would love to have been the guy who invented the modern stroller.
Chief, of course, is talking about Stephanie Koenig, a contributor to the show.
Who has a little baby named Claire. And so Claire comes in, and she sits right down in this very noisy place. Doesn't bother her at all. She snoozes right through it. But then the problem occurred when Steph is holding her and says, well, I'm going to the ladies' room. Here you are. And I go,
That's a lot of trust.
That's a lot of trust. And she goes, she's fine. They're not that fragile. I go, you sure feel that fragile? I never had any kids. So, of course, she lets out a screech. And, of course, everybody in the place wants to help me.
Right.
The Hispanic guy from the kitchen, Sam's walking by, and he goes, you know, I've got seven nieces and nephews. I can help you. And I go, well, she opens her eyes. She checks me out and figures out I'm not an axe murderer. And she goes right to sleep, and everybody, knows what he's doing.
There you go.
Which I don't know what I was doing. I couldn't wait for her to come back. I'm thinking, I hope there's not a long line. She comes back over here. But anyway, Steph is doing great. I mean, she'll be back on the show. She was this week. And she brings in an incredible view, having traveled to a lot of these places we're talking about, Maddie, which is amazing that she's been to Guatemala. She's been to Colombia. She's been to those places. So
very well traveled.
And sort of like Lou. I mean, if you want to ask somebody what's going on in Europe, I can either try and deduce it from the papers, or we can ask Lou. He's just there.
Who was just there.
You know, so, I mean, it's amazing how much you learn from people, you know. And, but anyway, it was the viral video. What do you got to do to be on video of like 90 bazillion times?
Do something really stupid or do something really outrageous?
Yeah. I don't,
So, of course, the video Chief is referring to is from Game 3 of the NBA Finals, where Kyle Lowry of the Raptors dove into the crowd to save a ball and, you know, crashed into the fans, as you see four or five times during an NBA game, because the fans are right on top of the court, those, you know, $2,000 courtside seats per game. And
I'm going to say up that.
And, well, for the finals, yeah, they're probably up that significantly, especially Golden State, where it's all billionaires that have the season tickets there. Literally billionaires, not millionaires, billionaires. Anyway, and
they wouldn't associate with millionaires,
right? Exactly. And one, speaking of billionaires, one of the minority owners of the Warriors and a successful businessman apparently kind of gave Kyle Lowry a shove in the back as he was getting back on the court after he crashed into the crowd, and it pissed a lot of people off because why is this fan shoving a player in the back? But then it pissed people off even more when they found out who the guy was. That he was actually a part owner of the Warriors. And so the video was played about a gazillion times over the 48-hour period, and all of the hot take debate shows on ESPN and the other networks debated sort of back and forth as, you know, why and how and what. And the Warriors came out, and I don't know if this was NBA mandated or if it was Golden State mandated, but they said he will not be attending any of the remaining finals games, which is interesting.
He's banned from me for a year.
Yeah, so I was watching the Cub game that night and then going back and forth to the NBA game, during the commercials. And so I missed the play, and then I never watched those shows, so I missed the video. I mean, I sort of saw it, but I didn't watch it. I didn't dissect it. So, I didn't see how egregious the shove was.
Well, for those of you that may have like a regular job,
like me.
Yeah, like you.
Where you can't sit and watch crap like that.
Well,
all day.
I mean, fortunately, my day starts early. But the market closes at 3:30, and I'm, you know, still talking to clients maybe till 4:15. Then I go over to the club and sit, you know, try and do some bike work, and right in front of the bike are all these TVs. So there's Judge Judy on one TV, then you have the two or three sports shows that are on every afternoon now. There's sports talk is on all afternoon.
Well, yeah, and those shows are just mindless. I mean, like topic one, let's debate this for 30 seconds. Yeah. Topic two, and it's just like,
and they show
my
you the
God.
Topics.
Yeah, and so, Who do you side with? And some of them, it's like some of them, you can vote who you side with on the debate, and it's just like, it's so mindless. I just can't.
But also, many people.
It's probably perfect for when you're working out. But
people love that stuff because.
I know.
I remember the guy, who was the guy that was on Real Nice Guy? T-Dub. Was it Tommy Williams? What was his name? He was the all-night guy score when you and I were there.
Well, I remember Les Grobstein. Who was the overnight guy forever and still is?
I think he might have been the Saturday.
But he may have left briefly. And
I think you're right. But T-Dub did weekends there.
Okay,
anyway, he did a bunch of stuff, and he was a guy that was an absolute master. He'd get on the show by himself, which I don't like to do. I like to be able to bounce stuff off people. He'd get on the show by himself, and he'd have an adept producer like you, and he'd say, I think Frank Thomas was the best ball player ever to play in Chicago. You know, and of course, everybody's in their car. Everybody's doing something. The thing lights up, and the show becomes. I'm going to say the people that call in. I was going to say the idiots that call in. The people that call in, and one is against it. What do you mean? You know, it was Billy Williams. No, it was Ernie Banks. What about did you forget Hack Wilson? Well,
right.
You know, and all of a sudden, this thing, it goes on for on for on. You know, should a DH be considered the best player when he didn't play? I mean, and literally, you can work up 2-3 hours with people wanting to hear themselves.
Well, when you're hosting by yourself, and I've done this a lot, and on the score, and especially if you're doing a weekend or a night or something where you don't have quite as many listeners, that you really didn't have a choice. I mean, every sort of 30 minutes, you would introduce a topic.
Well, man, he was entertaining. I wanted to call it.
To me, though, that's not entertaining to me.
Well, but I'm saying when you start getting it every single day,
it's just mindless. It's like I'm just throwing out a take, and then you guys can debate it, and then I sit back and like make fun of the callers.
Right.
I mean, that's
he never really did that.
And not necessarily make fun of them, but you know, some people make fun of them. Some people argue with them.
Two guys in the afternoon. That's what they do.
Yeah,
that's their shtick.
Right. And they're not there anymore, but
one of them is.
Well, one of them's in the morning now.
Oh, right.
But anyway, you know, and that's, I just don't like that anymore. I guess, but that was a template. I mean, that was the template for hosting by yourself on Sports Talk Radio forever. And I just find it mindless. But that's now the TV template, and it's not just sports. That's the political channels. That's the CNBC. That's everyone. It's literally throw a topic out, bring out two people with opposite perspectives, have them argue for literally 90 seconds tops, and then switch to the next topic and keep it going. And then the only show that does that I actually still enjoy is Pardon the Interruption, with Tony Kornheiser and Chicago's own Michael Wilbon, because they argue in not a shout each other down way. They just sort of, it's very sarcastic, and that's why I kind of enjoy that show still. I don't watch it that much because I'm not in front of the TV that often at that time. But
who's the guy who was on with his dad?
That's I'm drawing a blank. The guy down in Miami, Dan Le Batard.
Right.
Yeah, and that show I've seen a few times too, and it's not bad. It's because it's not shout each other down.
No.
And it's just annoying. Like, yeah. But for whatever reason, it gets ratings and people like it. You know, there's a segment of the population that likes that, and it's the same thing on Fox and CNN and the political shows, and it's the same thing on CNBC. They kind of do that. They throw the topics out there and they bring out people to debate them, and it's just not very in depth. It's not very intelligent. I just don't get it.
Well, I just, the weird part of it is that I've seen, go to Notre Dame basketball games and so forth, and went to a lot of Bulls games in my day. And sometimes people, when they're hustling their behind off, go flying into, usually it's the band or somebody one under the other. It's usually behind the basket more so than the sides. Well, once in a while, you see somebody almost go over the scorer's table. I mean, it's...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it happens.
The broadcast team gets dived into all the time.
But what I'm saying is, without actually being there, you sense some guys go in, and they know they just landed on a bunch of people, and they get up, and they're, like, apologizing, and you could just tell by the body language and probably that, is anybody hurt, blah, blah, blah. I mean, they knew what they had to do. They did it. There's no problem with hustling. I agree. I would never say there was. Then there's other people that can't wait to shove the guy out of the way and get back on the court like, you guys don't belong being here. What are you doing here? And it's your fault. So, I mean, I've seen it happen a million different ways. And I would not have a problem with a guy landing on me, because he was hustling. But if he got off me pretty rough, I'd say, who the hell are you?
Well, I didn't see the play.
No, I'm saying, my point is, if you're not right there, you don't really know what the attitude sort of was on whose side. In the film doesn't even give you that, because that's why they had to play it a million times. It's not all that obvious why, somebody would shove somebody or not.
I understand your point, but my I guess
it wasn't much of a shove.
Yeah, I like I said, I need to sit and watch the video. But if the play
from
the
every
ball,
angle,
if the ball is still in play, so did he actually save the ball or did he attempt to and wasn't?
I think he attempted to.
So I
don't know that part.
Okay,
nobody cared about that.
Well, so here, but I think it matters because, and here's why: if he dove into the crowd and wasn't able to save the ball, which happens, probably 50% of the time, then I think you get up kind of. Slowly.
I think he did that, but if somebody wants to tweet
then
us.
I think you get up slowly and you make sure everyone's okay, and sometimes you'll see the guy grab a bite of popcorn or something to be funny, and then everyone kind of cheers, and then you walk back on the court. But if you actually did successfully save the ball and the play is continuing,
then
you got to get your ass back on the court, and you're going to push people out of the way and get back on the court. So I think that matters, and somebody tweet us in, or Jack, if you saw the video, feel free to chime in, because I didn't see it, but I'd be interested to know if he actually did save the ball.
But I just, and then of course every single guy, and of course all the players are, there was not a white player that they interviewed, What do you think? How much disrespect? I mean, we don't need that, man. I mean, come on. If this guy,
so you were saying, you're saying that they were playing a racial aspect of it?
I think it got to the point where we were, I don't know what we were doing. If it's just one old grumpy white guy to shove somebody when he should, just get him out of there. You know what? Don't have him back. I get that part. But, you know, somewhere along the line, it starts to become marketing. And I just don't like that. I don't know. It got way bigger than it ought to be, I guess is what I'm saying. In this day and age. I mean, you know, I love sports more than anybody. Lace the laces up and go play. You don't need to talk about it 4 hours before and people's personality. And it's just, get it over with.
Well, they got to fill 24 hours a day.
I know. It's come out of somewhat of a different.
And it's a time now where, you know, baseball is such a local thing now. You can't talk baseball on a national scale and keep people's attention.
No.
So the last two things going right now are NBA and then NHL. And
right.
NHL is not popular at all. No one watches it. So you NBA is all you got right now. And there's only 4 games left, potentially maybe less. And so they're really milking it for everything they have.
Well, did you see the guy in Boston, Chara? He got his jaw broken.
I heard.
Well, then he comes out, and it was a game-time decision, and they fit him up with this full-face mask. And he's, you know,
and how many cortisone shots did he get?
Well, probably Novocaine. Else, but,
yeah.
So then, of course, I turn the game on the second period, and they have one commercial. They run a tape of, like, the first 5 minutes of the game of how many times people went out of their way to give him a shot as high as they could to see if he could hang in there.
Oh, I'm sure.
I mean, it's
isn't that funny?
But he hung in there, though. I mean, the guy's 42, and he's probably, I don't know if it's his last year or whatever. He's not as quick as he used to be, but he's on the – plus, the Boston guys love to give him grief whenever they lose. Oh, you got to get that guy. He was on the ice for 68% of Boston's goals.
And yet he's considered one of the all-time great Bruins.
Yeah.
Of all time. He's just, you know, he's on the last – you know,
well, he's not as quick as some of these other guys.
Well, of course, he's at the end of his career.
Yeah.
The cool thing I saw about that was it was either before the game or after the previous game. He still went and met the press, even though his jaw was wired shut, and said, "I'll still take, you know, questions, and I'll just write my answers." And I thought that was really interesting. So he said, "I'll take, you know, a handful of questions, not a ton."
That was actually probably before it was wired shut.
It might have been. Yeah. And I think he got asked, you know, 5 or 6 questions, and he literally just wrote the answers down and then handed it to the to the media.
What if you see him get hurt?
The guy takes a
big shot, and he's right in front of the dude who's going to block it. But instead of blocking it somewhere else, the puck hits his stick, shoots right up underneath his. Whatever, his eye shield whacks him right in the jaw. Down he went.
Oh, man.
It was bad.
And he's a hockey player, so they stitch him back up and they're right back up.
Well, yeah, but they didn't expect the broken jaw piece.
No. I don't know if anyone else is guilty of this, but I just don't have any interest in sports unless my team is involved these days. And I shouldn't say any interest. I'll still watch big games here and there. Definitely NFL, I'll watch all the big games. But for baseball, basketball, hockey, I watch every single Cubs game. If the Cubs aren't on and the Sox are on, I'll watch the White Sox. I can watch the Bulls, although they've become pretty unwatchable for the most part, but I can watch them. And then Blackhawks, I'll watch, you know, definitely big hockey, Blackhawks playoff games. But like these national games, I just don't have a ton of interest in watching them. I'll watch every single Cubs game before I watch like an NHL or NBA playoff game.
I'm kind of astounded. I'm not, you know, I couldn't skate for a squat when I was a kid, but it was not my sport. But I'm stunned at the hockey playoffs, how even these teams are, how much these people. It is serious sport. I mean, it's like baseball playoffs. These teams are so good. Basketball. I mean, finally, we got two teams that deserve to be on the court with each other, right?
Well, no, that's only because Golden State's hurt. Otherwise, they would sweep Toronto.
Okay, so you're saying it's not even.
No, I think if you took Kevin Durant, their best player, out. And then for game 3, you took Klay Thompson, who is their third best player, out.
Okay, I didn't know he was that good.
And they're still close games. I mean, I think if the Golden State's healthy, I think they sweep Toronto or win in 5. With Klay Thompson back, even without Durant, I think then it's even. And, you know, we'll see what happens tonight.
Well, I'm saying the hockey is most of these guys are pretty darn even, and they hustle like there's no tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's pretty serious stuff. S&P futures up 725. NASDAQ futures up 25. Dow futures up 68. We're going to try for several days in a row.
Have a jobs number coming up.
And we'll have a jobs number, yeah, with the big jobs. 180 is the number. We'll see what it is. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks. Time high.
highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous. No return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort. Some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com. Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right
now. Right here, right now. Hello, everyone. Thanks, Stocks and Jocks. Stocks and Jocks is a fast market here because these labor numbers just came up and, we were looking for 180 and we got 75. That's not the number anybody was looking for. S&P futures not only up 4.25, NASDAQ futures up 17, Dow only up like 20. It was up 68 a second ago. The over in Europe, we've got the DAX was up 84. 0.7, I bet it's not quite that high to second. FTSE up 62.8%. CAC around up 81, 1.5%. Over in Asia, like I said, the Chinese markets are closed. Nikkei up 110, 20,884. Oil is up 76 cents, which is 1.5%. 53.35. Brent up 86 cents, 62.53. RBOB 173. Gold is down $1.30. It was actually down more earlier, but these, silver is up 2 cents, 14.93. Can't quite make it to 15. Matty, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Again, 75 is the number. I'll get the rest up in a second. I have the A1 report, which has been filled in. We'll get that one for you as well.
Coming up on 35 minutes past the hour, the sports weather traffic update.
Wait a minute. They also dropped last month's down to 153 from 189. So,
wow.
Yeah, so that's a big
a revision as well. Yeah. This sports weather traffic update is brought to you by Luckbox Magazine, the guide to money and probability. It's available on newsstands for $7.99 per issue. And Stocks and Jocks listeners receive a free digital subscription at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. I signed up for mine. Make sure you sign up for yours. It's an awesome online subscription. And then the physical copies are great, too. As far as traffic is concerned, we've been very light this morning, all morning. No issues coming in on the Edens. Traffic building on the Kennedy, but no accidents in either direction. Same for the Eisenhower. Stevenson looks good. Southside expressways are all quiet. The only major issue in the area is what we mentioned last hour as well. Downtown Franklin between Washington and Randolph in the loop is closed due to a rollover crash that happened earlier this morning. So crews are still getting that taken care of in the loop. But one other crash of note, Oakton at Harlem Avenue, there is an accident. But everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, lots of sunshine, cool by the lake, but mild temperatures overall. We'll reach the mid-70s inland, upper 60s to low 70s by the lake. So beautiful day. Right now it is sunny and 58 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, a hot one today. Sunshine with a high of 102. Right now it's clear and 80. In sports, Cubs lost yesterday afternoon 3-1 to the Rockies, took 2 of 3 in the series. They welcomed St. Louis into town for a weekend series this afternoon at Wrigley. White Sox were off. They're at Kansas City tonight, 7:15 first pitch. Diamondbacks were off as well. They're at Toronto tonight. That's a 4:07 Arizona time first pitch this evening. In hockey, the Blues beat the Bruins 2-1 in Boston, so St. Louis leads that series 3-2, looking to close it out on Sunday night. Game 4 of the NBA Finals is tonight, Golden State versus Toronto in the Bay Area. That's an 8 o'clock Chicago time tip-off. The Raptors lead that series 2-1. Chief.
Yeah, if you look at the numbers, and we'll get Carl in next week to go over these even more. Now, what I just told you, the 75,000 number, well, that's the establishment survey. Okay, now, if you go to your household data historical, it's the household data. There's two different surveys. One is you call up all the companies and you say, did you hire anybody? Duh. Or did you lose somebody? And that's the number there. Then you also survey households and say, is anybody in your place working? So the numbers, in the end, one would think would match, but on a monthly basis, they don't necessarily match. So for May, we actually had the population went up by 120,000 people. People in the workforce went up by roughly 170,000 people, which is a little interesting. The percentage of people working is the same. The actual employed people is 156, 645 last month, 156, 758 this month. So the household survey actually has the amount of people working up by 113,000. The unemployed number went up a little bit, 60,000 people, but the ratio stayed the same, 3.5. And here's the number that we continually look at least on the show we do, the amount of people that are neither working or unemployed, but somehow out there. Now, granted, there's students and everything else in there, which stays somewhat constant. This is where all your people on disability and all the other stuff go. There's 96 million people there. Therein lies, I think, the problem, man. Somehow or another, these are people that are not working. They might be in school, but they're also, if you're not considered looking for work, you're not considered to be unemployed. So what we've done in the last few years, all we've really done is take people out of the unemployed column, where in the unemployment rate, and they're counted, and we pushed them into this other column, which is, you know, for example, the darkest depths of the labor recession was 2010. We had 14,800,000 people unemployed, okay? We had 83 million people that were sort of out of the labor force, not looking. Well, now if you fast forward to where we are now, we're down to 5.9 million people unemployed, but there's 15 more people in the other column. So we've pushed a lot of people into the disabled and other stuff, and that's, I think, part of the issue that we were having now. So is that somewhat understandable, Manny, or no?
Yeah, I think so.
Now,
John probably understands more.
Hey, John, how are you, buddy?
Good morning. Good morning. Yes, it is understandable to answer your question. And how are you today?
Good. Why? These are all kind of adjusted numbers, John. Why is there such a disparity between the household numbers on a monthly basis and the establishment numbers? I mean, that's why Carl likes to go year over year, because the adjustments fall out like year over year. I mean, last month, these guys had 170,000 people more employed. If you look at the household survey, it actually went down. So the May number is almost exactly the same as the March number. and it's almost exactly the same as the January number, and it's lower than the February number. So if you look at the household survey, we're only up, really, 694 to 758. We're only up 60,000 people working since January, according to
right.
these, which is nowhere near the same as you're seeing on the establishment side.
Right.
And we've
pushed. Well, they like to, what's the old saying goes, baffle us with leap.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, because, I mean, I've got the column that I look at, the not unemployed, not working, we don't know what you are. That number's up from 95 million, almost flat, to 96,215. That's only in 5 months. It's 1,000,002 people that went, like, someplace. We don't know what you're doing, but you're there. And that's the column. And these other numbers are just, and the unemployment rate, I continue to say, not me, I'm sure he's long dead. The first economics professor I ever had in my second class, the guy said, this unemployment number basically sucks. but people still use it. That was 1971, right? And here we are, still using it. So there.
Just all right, that's exactly correct. Right.
But I don't think we had this other number back then of the amount of people that were, you know, out of the workforce kind of thing.
So if, you know, we've long argued on the show, dating back to, you know, the Obama presidency and then certainly the first couple of years of this presidency, that the job numbers are, you know, sort of inaccurate and sort of maybe don't matter in either direction, positive or negative. Whether that's true or not, I don't know the answer. But do you think that the revisions and the miss this month have anything to do with the trade wars that are finally maybe starting to wear on people?
I think yes. Every one, well, I don't know if it's so much that, but every number you see, the ISM numbers, the manufacturing numbers, even the ones from the, you know, the mini feds, the Philly Fed survey and the Empire State survey, all those numbers have been coming down, right, John? I mean, the numbers have not been good.
Correct.
The last couple of months. I mean, not horrible, but just.
No, ever so slightly, right.
Yeah. And I think when you look at the deficits and virtually everything, and I think, you know, Trump has somewhat of an idea. I mean, he's, you know, I rail on him all the time, but he's not the biggest dummy on earth either. Somehow or another, I think for us to be healthy, we've got to get 8 to 10 million people out of whatever his last column is and get them in the workforce. Because the ratio has just changed. I mean, in 2000, we had 137 million people working, and we had, say, 70 million people in this other column. So it's basically two people working for one person there, for one person not working, students and everything else. When you look at that ratio, two people gainfully employed for every one person not, even if you added the unemployment rate in there, it's 73. So it's basically 2 to 1. And now, if you go to this month, we're talking, there's 156 employed, 96 plus 5, so say 100 million that aren't. Okay, so now you're talking, instead of 2 to 1, that's now 3 to 2. That's a massive difference in the math of people
right.
that are working, you know, paying for the other people that aren't working, for lack of a better term, even. So, I mean, we must be talking about people on disability, so somehow or another, I think you gotta get back to that 2 to 1 number. That's a hell of a lot healthier. Now, how you do that, I don't know. I think it takes some innovation. I think you need to, for instance, you know, I don't know, John, if you agree with any of this, but in the Chicago area, for instance, and not in the kid you haven't had yet, Maddie's lifetime, I think you need to get the commuter trains to go another 30 miles further at 90 miles an hour. You need to get, when the Chevy plant or whatever left Janesville, Wisconsin, there's probably 15,000 people there that if they had access to places would somehow get off disability or whatever, maybe it's 5,000, and actually start to work again. Even though they may have had, you know, I'm not saying they're illegitimate on the disability or whatever, but maybe there's a way, you've got to get some people out of that back column, because they go from being a payee to a payer. It's a huge difference. I mean, if you start thinking, you know, 2 to 1 for every, you know, I'm including students there too, but even that, you still need, you know, two people working for one person who's not. Three people working for two people that aren't that, I don't know how high that number can get before you fall. It surely can't get 1 to 1. or else I think you really got a problem. I mean, that means for every guy's salary, half of it's going somewhere else, or at least for another person, it won't be half. But I mean, am I wrong with this, man? I mean, the numbers just are troubling.
I would agree.
And I think, you know, if you don't know what the problem is, you can't focus on it. I mean, if you think that there's, you know, people involved, to give you an Illinois story, because I met with one of the guys who's on the board of this, you know, potential railroad thing. This had to be, John, I'm saying 5 years ago, maybe six. The guy buys me an adult beverage, and he says, you know a lot about railroads, and we're trying to put this rail line in here in Chicago. And I look at it, and I'm looking at all the tracks, and I went back up on my maps, and I said, you know, we're talking about tracks that are already there. In one area, they were gonna, you know, give them an isolated track, which was a good idea, but it wasn't necessarily day one. My response was, hey, it's March. Let's say in May we start running one train in the morning and one at night. You don't need any stations. You need that. Just to show what streets they're going to stop, and let's stop there. If it looks like the train's oversubscribed, we'll do two. And if it looks like it's a success, we'll start building station. Why does this have to be a 15-year plan? So every swinging idiot gets his finger in the, he's building this station and somebody else is building that station, and we're all cutting up the piece of the pile. Like, let's do it before the people in these cities are gone. I mean, we're talking about cities like Dyer, like Harvey. You know, these are horrible places. Compared to economically, I'm not saying the people are horrible; they're not. But if people there don't have a way downtown and are looking to, if there's 2,000 people at Harvey, you're going to jump on this train every day and get a job downtown, and all of a sudden I get back to Harvey and start spending money. Why are we waiting a decade?
So you're saying there are fiscally responsible ways to sort of pilot these things,
yes,
right away,
yes,
without either all in or all out.
Right.
Yeah, and I would agree with that.
It would be different if it's a total new right away, but they're not.
And yet we never do that.
No, we never do that.
It's always either the huge 10-year plan that's going to cost billions of dollars,
yes,
or it's
yes,
we can never do this.
Right.
It's never, well, you know, actually, let's try it out this way.
That's right.
And if we see the demand to invest, let's do it. And if we don't, then we didn't really lose anything.
But that's the problem, I think, with a lot of the social.
That, I think that applies to a lot of things in life altogether.
Well, yeah,
absolutely.
Well, I mean, even most of our social programs. I mean, if you see people having problems, whatever happened, these people have a flood. These people, this, thing, I think. Maybe there is an influx of immigration in a certain area. And there's part of, I think, what you need to do in a country that actually cares about people, which I think ours does, you put together a program and you try and help, okay? Now, the program is probably not going to be perfect. Why would it be? We're not perfect people. Last time I checked, I look in the mirror and I go, that's not perfect. I mean, come on. There needs to be, let's try something, let's put some people together, let's give it a shot, let's monitor it for 5 years, and by the way, at the end of 5 years, it's gone unless we think it's really working and we'll try something else. I mean, that's the logic that I don't see in our government. I mean, I don't know why we can't do that. It doesn't seem like it's that difficult. I mean, why can't we figure out how something's working? And if we think we might need a rail line, we're in a place and we have tracks there, why don't we, like, do it? And if it looks like we can do it better, then we can increase the average speed from 50 to 60 to something, right? I mean, some of the stuff we do here, even this, the flyover, there's a flyover on the south side here, John. There's one little bit of revisionist railroad history, which I always got to come up with, but when the Rock Island, which also were the 20th, New York Central tracks, comes into LaSalle Street Station, okay? Goes down to Inglewood, and then the trains that came from the Union Station to Pennsylvania, there was a cross there. And trains would come by, and then there was a station there for both trains. It was all on the same level. So you could only go one way or the other. You couldn't have two at the same time because you had a cross, essentially a cross track. By the way, what are those things called, Jan? A cross track for trains. Interesting name.
I don't know off the top of my head. What are they called, Tom?
A frog.
A frog, huh?
Yeah, well, why it ever got to be that name, but anyway, it did. But the, so they decide, well, in order to stop the train, you know, the freight trains coming through Chicago are delayed, delayed, delayed. And one of the reasons is the passenger commuter trains get the right of way. So there's trains stacked up trying to sneak through between commuter lines. So somebody says, we need an Inglewood flyover where the commuter trains go over the top. Well, first of all, anybody would probably say, yeah, we do. I'm going to say, Manny, what would you think? 15-year, 20-year program from the planning stage to done?
Oh, yeah.
And now by the time it's done, I'm going to say virtually all the freight trains are now already routed through Joliet or some other place. Probably half of them don't even come through Chicago. So by the time you're done, you don't even need it. But what's the point? Why couldn't that have been a 2-year program? But by the way, Maddie, you just mentioned, you're not the first. Whose quote is this? Human kindness has never weakened the stamina or softened the fiber of a free people. A nation does not have to be cruel to be tough.
I don't know who said that, but I like it.
John?
I do not know either, and I would agree. I like it, too.
Franklin D. Roosevelt.
Okay. That makes sense.
Now, do you think our current White House acumen could ever come up with something like that?
I don't think he can use any sort of big words. Why is the Dow up so much?
We just ran up here. The unemployment rate 3.6%. Maybe now the word is that the Fed is going to...
The Dow just ran up 100 points.
Yeah. There has to be something here regarding... Oh, I've got 3M up 5 points. So... it has to be something to do with somebody's idea that the Fed is going to use these numbers as a way to lower rates or something.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right.
Because now we're into this good news is bad news and bad news is good news swing, which I'm never comfortable with. I don't know that on the short term you have to go with it because, on the other hand, since I'm long everywhere, I'm pretty happy about this. Boy, my gold guys.
The last few probably, days have been good.
Yeah, our gold guys think we're heroes now. It only took us, what, 4 years?
David writes in to your last point a quote from Milton Friedman: "The government solution to a problem is usually as bad as the problem."
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's right. It's not that let's do the best we can. Let's try it. And by the way, manna from heaven was a good idea until you didn't need it anymore.
And I don't. I guess my point is I don't think it has anything to do with the government per se. I just think, you know, like you say, a camel is a horse designed by committee. I think when you put large groups of people in a room to make a decision, it ends up often being a bad one. And a 15, 20-year plan that's going to cost billions of dollars with excess waste. Companies do it. Government certainly does it, probably even more so, where there's often a very sort of simple way to pilot the program for a shorter term, for less investment, and then you can kind of see if it's worth, you know, continuing or not. And I think that's how you get bipartisan sort of compromise, too, when you approach it that way. When, you know, you go to your counterparts across the aisle and say, hey, we want to try this, and we're not going to, you know, go all in and spend a bunch of money and piss everyone off, but here's a short-term plan where we think we can pilot it, and then if we hit these sort of goals along the way or milestones or whatever, then these additional investments will automatically trigger. If we don't, then we'll scale it back or end it. And I think you can get people to agree if you approach it that way, but for whatever reason, oftentimes large groups of people
but
don't.
Look at, I'm giving her all the chance in the world, the new mayor of the city.
You've given her like 4 days, and then you've already been ripping her. Her seat's not even warm.
I got a big issue with this Lincoln Yards. And her first thing, between the two elections, she had her chance to stop it. And from what I understand, the people promised an awful lot more minority participation, and she said, let it go. And now a couple afterwards, she's jumping in and stopping. So maybe she made one mistake in her one accommodation and said, I'm not doing that again, which is very possible. And if that's the truth, I'll be happy to congratulate her on the next 10. But I just, you know, must be because, Maddie, you've taught me to be more of a newspaper guy than just sitting on here. When I drive down Cortland and it's jammed, you can't go anywhere. It's a 2-lane road and a 2-lane bridge, the oldest in the city, by the way. And I look to my right and my left, and I envision 25,000 people on each side of the street. I just have a problem with it.
Well, I can tell you.
I mean, am I wrong?
No, that the fact that we both live on the sort of cusp of that neighborhood, of where that neighborhood's going to be, just to the east of it, As it stands right now, that's already a horrific sort of pain point in the city
right.
to get from east to west. So if you add a ton of people there, it's going to be even worse, obviously, just being logical. So without having seen the plans or not even knowing if those plans exist, I hope that there's going to be an infrastructure investment in that area as well. Otherwise, it flat out won't work.
Well, because what we're talking about...
It's a one-lane bridge going east to west. That's already a nightmare. You got the expressway going through there. You got the river going through there. You have all these big industrial lots, and it's one lane, and it's just horrific. And if you're going to add bus lines there and 50,000 people or 25,000 people or whatever it is, it's just not going to work. They're going to have to revamp that whole infrastructure, which I assume they are.
Well, where are you going to put it? In a river?
Well, I don't know. And another thing they need to do is, for commuting purposes, they need to ramp up water transportation, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I think, if you're not going to have an L stop right there, if you have water taxis that take the river right to downtown, I think that would help immensely.
Absolutely.
And we can do that.
20 below zero.
Well, obviously, it would have to be an indoor-outdoor thing because in the winter you can't be outside. But you put stations all along the river, and people hop that and take that right into downtown, and I think that would work terrifically for
that. I'm
going
to guess that the imagine, but here, to see how messed
and
up this
we'll
is,
never do that.
John, just for people, I mean, there are people listening going, wait a minute, just another area you're building a building. No, this was zoned industrial, this area.
For like 100 years.
Well, yeah, for like 100 years. But the biggest employer recently is this outfit called Finkel Steel. Now, these guys they have like 100 patents. They move them to the south side. They make stamping dies and stuff. It's pretty intricate stuff I could talk about, but we don't need to. But the bottom line is they worked only at night. I mean, they were open during the day. So but all the traffic for this place was at night. Now, why was that, Matty?
I don't know.
Get a load of this, Jan. Their hearths were electric-powered. Have you ever heard of such a thing? And the reason why they were electric-powered is because Chicago has, well, they still have all these old nuclear reactors, right? I mean, one of the few places here in the country that has them. And at night, they'll give you the power. I mean, you can, because you can't turn these things off. And so the price they got for electricity from, say, midnight to 7 a.m. was so dirt cheap that you were able to have essentially a steel factory or whatever, a manufacturer using electric power, which you would never even think of during the day, right? So all the traffic was at night. So now these guys are gone, and you're going to put up high-rises where they're leaving the same time as everybody else. And the Armitage L stop, what does it take you? You wait three trains to get out in the morning, Matty?
In the morning, yesterday I didn't have to wait at all, no problem, when I took it in. But the day before, Jill said she had to wait three trains. So it's very possible, yeah.
So what are we going to have? We're going to have 400 buses taking people over to that platform? That's the solution?
I mean, that's going to be part of it, probably, which is, like I said, you're going to have to do all kinds of infrastructure investment for this to work.
But when you say wait for three trains, Matty, does that mean they were full?
Yeah, they're full they're like Japan full, where you can't even shove no possible way could you shove another person in there. And sometimes it's like, if there's any sort of delay by like 5 minutes, then that's what you run into. When they're right on time, then you can usually squeeze in, or you might have to wait one train. But if there's any sort of setback at all, then it's a nightmare.
And we're 30 seconds, real quick. Children's Memorial Hospital came down and moved it over to Northwestern. They're putting, 40,000 people where the hospital used to be, Matty? It's a block away from the Fort and L stop. Challenge you to get on that thing in the morning. Just walk up the steps.
Oh, I bet.
Now, and all of a sudden, they're going to add 40,000. SP Futures now up 975 after the numbers. Again, labor number 75,000, way below. Last month revised down 40,000, so not good at all. But that means the Fed's probably going to raise even more. I mean, lower even more. NASDAQ Futures up 35. Be back Monday, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.